This is the Sexy Life podcast for women who want to experience the best sex, healthy and happy intimate relationships, and live a life that lights up your heart and soul. I'm Sarah Rose Bright, a sex and intimacy coach and the creator of Intimate Sexuality. It's my joy to help women and couples to love and celebrate their sexuality, create fulfilling relationships, and find their pleasure, playfulness, and passion for life. A sexy life isn't the perfect, polished life. This is living from our hearts and appreciating and celebrating the magic of life in all its messy glory, embracing the reality of our humanness, the highs and the lows, the beauty and the challenges. I invite you to join me and my expert guests for candid, juicy, and inspiring conversations around sex, relationships, and life today. Whether you're curious about what's possible or committed to living your most wonderful and fulfilling life, I'm so happy you are here. Today, I'm talking with Kate Lambert as she shares her personal story of how her relationship transformed from, as she describes, rock bottom to now deep intimacy. And she shares a number of things that have helped her and her partner along the way and still do to this day. So there's something in this episode, if you're interested in different ways of relating, if you wonder what healthy relating looks like, if you're curious to deepen your connection with a partner, or you're looking to revitalize a connection, there is treasures here for all of you. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to today's podcast. And today I'm joined by my colleague, my friend, and all around amazing full power badass woman, Kate Lambert.
Woo-hoo! Yay!
Lovely to have you here today.
Lovely to be here, Sarah.
So I'm going to say a little bit about Kate and who she is. So Kate is a love, sex and relationship coach trained with the Tantric Institute of Integrated Sexuality. And Kate's also an Imago couples facilitator. So she helps people in relationships to regain love, intimacy and connection. And she is a female empowerer and women's sexual liberation expert, working to sexually empower women everywhere, helping them to reconnect to their sexuality pleasure, reclaim their inner power source, and also known as their sexual energy. Kate also is the founder of the Sister Circle Inner Temple. She hosts regular circles, sexual empowerment courses and workshops for women, and works one-to-one with women and couples around their sexuality and relationships. Wow.
That's me. I sound wonderful, don't I?
That's because you are. So really gorgeous to have you today. So I'd love to start with the question that I'm always interested in is, tell me how you got into this work.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So how did I get into this? So, you know, when you think like your life has been one kind of crazy jigsaw, like stepping from one thing to another, and you kind of don't know until you're in the present how those pieces quite fit together. I feel like mine's a little like that. So my background's in teaching, and I feel like that was a fundamental stepping stone for me into the work I do now. But I was always a really passionate teacher and wanting to guide others, and didn't really feel like I fit within that system, but knew that that was my role here. So it was after a medicine journey, actually, when my question was, how am I here to serve? Like, I knew that I had some kind of service here in the world. I didn't feel complete. I didn't feel like I was quite there on my path. And it was after that journey that starting women's circles came up for me. So I began women's circles. My first drum was gifted to me. And after doing women's circles for years and years and guiding women in that way, and a very reciprocal journey, really, it was all about everything that I was learning in my own personal development journey, and then being able to guide and teach and help other women with exactly the things that I was learning. So very kind of simultaneously teaching and learning. And then I decided I wanted to niche in women's work, and sexuality was always a massive subject for me. So much of my own learning and healing was in that journey, and so it felt a very natural kind of progression into the world of women's sexuality and then relationships.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you still do amazing work with women and helping women to become leaders and set up their own sister circles. And it's just really lovely to see that work continuing to blossom as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that felt really, you know, perfect for while I was kind of starting to niche out into doing sexuality work. It almost felt like, well, who's doing all the sister circles? Obviously, there's lots of beautiful women doing that, but it felt like my gift to the world to offer kind of like my sister circles to other women. So it's like, you know, we can just all take that information and use it. And then, you know, my kind of dream around that is that there'll be little lights on every corner of sister circles happening everywhere, sharing this work and, you know, this ability to be in community with each other.
Yeah, beautiful. And so today we're really going to hone in on the relationship aspect of your work, because
yes,
it's just such an important topic in terms of relationships. There's so much we can cover today. So I really want to hear about, first of all, your relationship with your partner, because it hasn't always been easy. And I'd love you to share some of that with the listeners today and just tell me a bit about your journey.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, it absolutely hasn't been easy. My journey with Luke has been, I mean, one of the hardest experiences I've ever had. You know, I think that I felt that I'd done a lot of personal development work. I felt like I knew myself really well. I felt like this kind of empowered, independent, sorted woman, and then got into a relationship. And it was just like everything came to the surface. My insecurities, trust, inability to communicate, you know, anger, communication blockages, disconnection. It all began to happen after the honeymoon period ended in mine and Luke's relationship. And we ended up in a really, in a really painful pattern for a really long time. And if, you know, if I could go into detail about how that was, but, you know, take my word for it. It felt like suffering, you know? Mm. But it also felt that we were stuck in repeating of old childhood wounding and patterns, and we were just going round and round and round in that. And, you know, who knows why we didn't, well, I know now why we didn't split up. You know, we had work to do. I really fundamentally believe that the universe kept kind of plopping us back down in front of each other and was like, this ain't over till it's over, you know, you have got work to do here. And that's pretty much what we did. We set out to heal, and that's the journey that's taken me to where I am now. Mm. And it's not been an easy one.
And were you aware that you were in a pattern of childhood wounding, or just aware that you were in a very stuck pattern? And could you share just a brief overview of like what that pattern looked like?
Yes. No, I wasn't aware at all for a long time that I was in any kind of childhood pattern. I hadn't really related it to my childhood at the time because, you know, it didn't seem that obvious. And so for Luke and I, you know, even though I'm kind of wary about labeling us, we would be closely matched to the anxious avoidant dynamic. So when Luke felt injured and in pain, he would withdraw, you know, either physically or emotionally. And when I was in pain, I would make like kind of lots of noise, like in attempts to keep, make him stay. You know, mine was all kind of like shaming, blaming, criticizing, that kind of responses, because I could almost see him leaving, and almost like the anxious attachment style is that I'll do anything to make you stay. And, you know, and that can involve lots of noise. And yeah, and we were just constantly kind of disconnecting from one another in that way. And that pattern played out for a really, really long time.
Wow. And just briefly, I'd love for you to share a little bit about the anxious avoidant attachment. So what's it, many people listening to this, I'm sure, won't have heard of attachment theory. So
sure.
Can you give a little summary of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and like I said at the beginning, my work doesn't really rest on those so much. You know, I do get couples that come to me and they say, well, I think I'm this. And what do you think? And I say, well, really, that isn't my, I don't feel that's really important. I feel that every couple can heal, and I wouldn't want that kind of like diagnosis to make people feel like they are something or they're labeled something. It can be helpful to understand. And so, yeah, absolutely give a little kind of summary of an anxious and an avoidance. So both of them are childhood wounded, and in the formative years of childhood they may not have gotten the love that they needed or in the right way as an infant. And that doesn't mean that you didn't come from a home where there was love. It just might not have been available consistently, or just not in the way that you most needed it as a little one. And what happens after those times is that there's an adaptive strategy that happens. So the adaptive strategy might be to make lots of noise, like a tantrum or a crying toddler might do to get the attention of a parent, or it might be to withdraw, to move away. And you know, there's lots of kind of studies that were done on infants, and when they had their mum's attunement, so like eye contact and expression, the child would do one of two things. If their mum looked away or disconnected from the child, they would either cry, so, and that would become the anxious style of connecting, or the child would turn away and withdraw from the mom in order to kind of protect itself. And so they're the two kind of, like, they call them maladaptive styles. Mm-hmm. But I guess a lot of us as adults then just fall into those ways of coping when we feel hurt with our partners. And the reason that that only kind of seems to appear in, well, it doesn't always just appear in our love relationships, but mostly in our love relationships, is because they're the relationships that most echo the deepest and closest relationship that we had in our formative years with our caregivers.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I agree with you, these things are useful to understand ourselves in the moment, but I've seen that where people are like, this is how I am, I'm anxious, I'm avoidant, and actually not to take it in as an identity, but just as a tool for understanding. So thank you for
absolutely
bringing that to life. So you and Luke were going round and round this dynamic for a good period of time. What was the catalyst for you to get some support with this? Because a lot of couples don't get support with these things, or they don't know where to turn, or don't feel comfortable talking to other people. But what happened for you? What was the catalyst?
Yeah, okay. So I guess the main catalyst was the fact that at some point it just became so painful that we couldn't stay, that we didn't have the tools to get back into connection with one another. In Imago, we call it getting back into the boat. Mm-hmm. You know, just whatever happens, getting back into the relationship boat, you know, at all costs. And Luke and I really never seemed to have that ability because it was too painful to get back in the boat. You know, and so we would fall back into our adaptive styles. And on one kind of day, I guess it just got too much. And that was when we decided that the relationship couldn't work anymore. And it was in that time that I was studying. And we were studying around worth. And it was at that point that I really, and a lot of inner child work actually, and I'd done inner child work before, but this was a somatic inner child work. And so for those people that don't know somatics, it just means that you're connecting with the body when you're doing that work. And it was in a lot of that worth work around how much am I worthy of a positive and successful relationship? What do I believe about that? When I went right back into my childhood beliefs around relationships and my first relationship with my my dad, you know, the story that my little girl had was that I wasn't worthy of a man staying, and I wasn't worthy of, and also relationships didn't stick around. You know, they were going to end. And so I realized that I was in one dynamic, which was I'm not worthy of a man to stay. And the other one was relationships will end. So make sure that you keep fucking, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
make sure that you keep fucking things up, because then it'll be less painful when it does end. And that's also another thing that I was doing. I was sabotaging because I came from a very dysregulated and very chaotic childhood. So, you know, when things were very calm and healthy in my relationship with Luke, I thought they were boring. So it was a part of my nervous system that didn't feel comfortable with things being normal. And so I would shake things up unconsciously, of course, to create kind of, you know, like what I thought was like excitement or drama in the relationship, because that was what my nervous system felt more familiar with. So they were the key things that I learned in that time away from one another. And, you know, I started to read about Imago and Harville Hendricks, and it was literally like a devouring of knowledge in that time, but it meant that I could, because Luke and I were in kind of separation, and it felt like a really important time to be like, holy shit, if you want this relationship to work, like, you have to learn, because you really don't have this model, and you also don't have a blueprint for this. Mm-hmm. And as these things started to come to light, I was just like, wow, this is all the stuff I need to know. Luke came back, and fortunately for me, he was in a position to take on this information. And we sat down with each other and we were like, if we really, we can't be in this suffering anymore, but it seems that we also can't not be with each other. So we are going to have to do this work. And that's where it began.
Wow. And so you went and got support with an Imago therapist, did you? Mm. Or did you do the work on your own?
Yeah, we got support. So for anyone listening, you know, I feel like there's two kinds of couples. And I use me as an example because I think it really helps couples to know how they should go about this work. So for Luke and I, we weren't, like I said, able to stay in the boat. We also, neither of us were able to contain. So when there's an argument that happened, I mean, it would be a rupture, you know, and he would leave and I would make loads of noise, and it was really uncontained. I also didn't realize how dysregulated I was in relationships. So I wasn't able to contain emotionally. So in Imago, we call them like minimizers and maximizers, and the minimizer will usually shut down and the maximizer makes all the noise. Well, the maximizer's job really is to start containing and regulating. And so I had that to learn. So for us, it was so important that we were guided, because we weren't in a position to do that on our own. We really needed holding. So if you're listening and you have like that kind of perhaps dysregulation in your relationship, or you're not able to contain that well, or your arguments just feel like combustions, then it may feel better to be held. And that's exactly what was right for us at the time. But if you guys feel like, well, we just disconnect, but it's actually quite calm, or maybe we both withdraw, but there's no kind of, I guess, fireworks or combustion, and you're both quite calm and contained and regulated, then it might be that you can practice Imago and other techniques on your own. So I hope that's helpful to kind of make that distinction.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And so tell us what Imago is.
Oh, okay. So Imago's like the brainchild of Harvel Hendrix. Some people kind of jokingly, but I think it's probably true that he downloaded it, that he, you know, because it's just a masterpiece in its simplicity and simultaneously its complexity. Like, it's a simple dialoguing tool that enables couples to communicate in contained, healthy ways, in a way that you truly listen, like perhaps you've never listened before. And I think a lot of us, particularly in the West, have lost that ability to really deeply listen. You know, we kind of very used to now, particularly with our mobile world, and, you know, we're given kind of snapshots of information. And, you know, we've learned to kind of like tune into things very, I guess, in short, snappy bursts, so that our ability to listen for long amounts of time can kind of like shut down. And so I feel that Imago for me has been like a deepening of being able to listen and learn. And so the whole system of Imago works in a dialogical way. It's a couple's framework, and at first it can feel quite formal and perhaps a little structured. But then when you become dialogical, it's almost like those lines blur and it becomes quite flowy. And And it just means that you're creating a really safe structure for communication, which means that both partners are truly, truly heard. And it doesn't ever mean that both partners need to agree. So, you know, if a couple's come to me and go, yeah, but which one's right? You know, how will we ever get to it? Where's right? You know, and that's actually the beauty of it, that there is no right. And it's each couple's understanding that they are two completely different people with two completely different perspectives on the world and different conditioning, different experiences. So they're going to see and experience reality in two completely different ways. And Imago allows you to literally leave your island, walk across the bridge onto the island and the other, and be like, wow, what is it like for you over here? And get really curious, like, what is your island like? And accepting that that island is completely different to yours. And that for me has been really revelationary, to kind of be able to accept that Luke's world will always be completely different to mine. And that's okay.
So what's changed in your and Luke's relationship as a result of this?
Oh my goodness. Just everything. I think the main part for Luke and I is safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we were always combusting or always kind of anticipating when the next rupture would be, that we were never really safe, like with one another, even though we really were in love, we weren't safe. And so I think that safety, and perhaps the safety that I've probably always needed, has entered into our dynamic. So, you know, he and I now feel like our nervous systems are regulated to one another. So when we're near one another, you know, rather than that kind of like inner tension start to happen, it actually, we kind of feel like we're attuning to one another in safe and regulated ways, which just feels, from a situation where we haven't had that before, it just feels really, really beautiful. And that enters into our intimacy together. Our bodies feel like they can open more. So we're having more beautiful, intimate, more sincere sexual experiences that feel more tender and close and opening, and I think that's a lot to do with our nervous systems and safety. And our communication, you know, we and Margot, all the time. Margot has literally become a way of life for us. You know, we and Margot are around issues, but mainly we and Margot and use our appreciations every day of how, you know, grateful we are for each other. And that's another part of Margot.
I love appreciation stuff. It's just so beautiful, isn't it, to do that as part of your everyday with everybody around you, isn't it?
Yes.
People you work with, your friends, and just to bring in that just sense of just noticing what's around your environment that people so often shut off from and take for granted, and to Absolutely. See those afresh every day. Because when I do that with my partner, I'm like, oh, I can't believe you just noticed that about me, or, you know, and it's just so, so beautiful. Or we're both surprised what we notice in each other, and it just builds a connection and a trust and safety and love and all these beautiful things.
Yeah, it's absolutely magical. And I think sometimes, like, we, you know, when our partner sends us an appreciation, something they really appreciate about us, I don't think sometimes we realise the impact of something we do that's so important for our partner.
Yeah.
And that's really amazing. It's like, wow, I have a lot of power in this relationship to alter my partner's like life experience. And yeah, and that's amazing. And when we realize that we hold so much power, we recognize our responsibility to be the safest and most loving and supportive partners that we can be.
And that's it, that you said there, your responsibility. And so many times I've seen people I work with around this, it's like they think that if their relationship just doesn't happen effortlessly, there must be something wrong with them.
Yes.
They may be not meant to be together. And, you know, I love the metaphor of the relationship garden, that you tend to that relationship. And just as you tend to the garden, you pick out the weeds, you plant the flowers and you water it and you love it. And, you know, you see those little videos of couples who are 100, and it's like, you know, what made your relationship so successful to 100? And they're all like, because we looked after our relationship garden. We never Absolutely. Go to sleep on an argument. We appreciate each other, all these things.
Yes.
But so many of us don't have a blueprint for that. And that's a word you mentioned before, was a blueprint, a model. So what do you feel are some of the things that make up a healthy relationship? We've talked about some of them already in terms of great communication, feeling safe with each other. What else is really great?
Well, I think the daily appreciations is so, so important. That can be done in like 2 minutes in the morning. If you've got children, it's beautiful to get the children involved. I think that's really, really important. We've already talked about that, but there's a couple of whys behind it. And one of them is because you can't buy into your own bullshit. If you are telling your partner regularly, you know, how much you appreciate them, how wonderful they are at X and Y. And then when we, because there's a lot of stories that we can get into, and you were talking about things before, like expectations and things like that, and I know I've fallen into that trap of, oh, well, my partner doesn't do that, and so maybe they're dot dot dot, or oh, maybe we're not as great as they are because they do dot dot dot, and we can start to create meaning around things, and sometimes that can lean towards the negative, particularly as we get into those kind of negative cycles in our relationship. You know, kind of creating stories and making meaning around our relationship. And so once we get into that, we think, oh, my boyfriend is a bit, or my partner is a bit, if we are regularly creating that like neuroplasty of like practicing on a daily basis what we love, that means we can't buy into our own bullshit stories when we don't feel that way. So I think that's just so important. And that we don't buy into those stories when we get rough and into those kind of rocky patches.
And I love that you shared there the stories, because Brené Brown, she talks about the phrase she uses with her husband all the time, which is when she wants to check something out, she'll say to him, the story I'm making up about you, yes, right now is. And we use that all the time because it takes it out of something that we almost believe to be a fact, because we've, yes, told ourselves that that's what it's like, yeah, and convinced ourselves very skillfully that that's how it is. And then it takes it into make believe. And it's like, the story I'm making up about this situation is, and yes, 9 out of 10 times it's never true. And
exactly. And it creates a lot of suffering when, huge, we align with those stories.
Huge. So it's just really great to be aware of them, isn't it? And just, yeah, to notice what you're telling yourself. And that's where I imagine the regular dialoguing that you're doing comes in. It's a way of flushing out those stories and keeping that space in between you as clear and clean as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also invites your partner into kind of, you know, recognizing, oh, that's why she reacted like that, because she created a story around that. And it just kind of like allows, you know, like, oh, when you get home from work, the story I make up is that you don't care about me. And it gives your partner the opportunity to say, well, actually, the truth around that is I'm just really highly stressed and this job's really important to me. But you are too, you know, and it gives that opening of a dialogue without, you are this, you are that. Because when we believe in those stories and we tell our partners what they are, that hurts and our partners immediately go into defense. And once they're in defense, I call it the shoot and load method. And so, you know, no one's listening to each other because you're ducking to avoid any of the kind of like stuff that's coming your way. You don't care about me, you always do that, you're this, and they're ready, kind of, you know, reloading the gun. And so all that's happening is two people are just kind of dodging bullets and ducking down, getting ready to fire up their own ammunition, ready to shoot something back. And that means that you've got two very disconnected people in pain. So the story I make up around that definitely loosens the grip around anything that probably is very much an untruth.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my God, I bet many people listening are like, I recognize that shoot and load method.
Yeah, and we can all fall into it, you know. Totally. Like, you know, and I want to hold my hands up and say that, you know, even though I'm a relationship coach, I'm in a very normal human everyday relationship, and we can always get tired and fall out of our, you know, healthy ways. You know, you were talking about tending to the relationship garden. I think both of us have referred to it as kind of relationship yoga before. When our relationship yoga isn't, you know, working, or we have kind of slacked around that, then we can fall back into old ways, and we can definitely fall into the shoot and load method. But for us now, because we can see it, yeah, and we know that we don't want to be there anymore, because particularly for Luke and I, we know how fucking painful it is, we have our way out, and we can literally say, we're not arguing, you know, we're directing this, let's take a minute. And if we get to those points, and you asked a question earlier around, you know, what are the other kind of really helpful things?
Yeah.
Sometimes you can get to the point in the relationship where you're not available to a Margot because you're flooded, or you're not available because you're really stressed out, and things will come out wrong. You're not really able to be present. And so they're three beautiful words. Are you available?
Mm-hmm.
Because that really gives us a chance to make sure that we are speaking to our partners at times where they really are available. And as partners, you know, we are running a kingdom. We're often running families, homes, sometimes running businesses together. And if the two people at the top, they need to communicate all the time about that kingdom. Yeah, so just checking, are you available? And that means that we can check in with ourselves. Am I available? Am I able to be really present here with my partner? And when we're not, there's no point doing the imago, because we're not in our frontal cortex. So we're not in that part of the brain that can come up with logical solutions, that can you know, think really reasonably about things. Because when we're not in our frontal cortex, we're in the part of our brain that just either wants to run away or fight. because that's our survival mechanism. And when we're in that brain, we're literally flooded with chemicals to help us to do that job, which is to run away or to fight. And so we're just not available. And that can also lead to partner disconnection. Like, I tried to speak to him and he's, you know, he just seems to be offline. And well, he probably is, you know, or I tried to speak to her and she just, you know, picks at everything I'm saying. She's probably, you know, in massive defense mode. And so a beautiful practice that Luke and I do when we get like that and we can't communicate, but we want to get back into connection, is to sit back to back and just connect our hearts from the back. So we don't even need to look at each other, which is wonderful. And just regulate our breathing. So just come into regulation and just breathing in, filling our hearts and just sending some love to each other that way. Just so a bit of energy and a bit of breathing and a bit of nervous system regulation. It's just magic.
That's so beautiful and so simple. You know, this is the sort of thing that can take a handful of minutes and you're back in the boat together. Yes. And I just really want to emphasize what you said, that are you available? Because I feel that that's such a tripping point for so many people when they have difficult conversations, is they just are so ready to speak, or the other person's just whatever's happening in their lives. And just that simple thing of saying, are you available? And with parenting, with all sorts of things, it's like, it might be not now, but give me 10 seconds, give me 10 minutes. Yes. And just that can transform the whole day, the whole conversation. That is that simple.
And my rule is, because often, you know, in mine and Luke's dynamic, it would usually be, and this can also fall in the anxious avoidant characteristics, that the anxious is usually more likely to do the work, and the anxious is more likely to move towards, and the avoidant, because of the avoidant, is more likely to move away. So what you can end up in that dynamic is, are you available? And they go, no. Are you available? No. Are you available? No. And so the rule with that, that can be really helpful for those kind of dynamics, is that the person that says no is then the person that returns.
Okay.
And make sure that it's not just one person trying to have that connection, that communication with their partner. And the other can get, that's quite a powerful place to be like, no, I'm still not available. No, you know, and kind of go into that kind of, power shift. I've been there as well. So I know that's really important that both partners do that work.
And wonderful. So what else would you say are practices, just simple practices that you and Luke have in your relationship, or that you use regularly with the couples that you work with, that are really powerful and also easy to sort of bring in and implement?
Yes. Okay, so another really lovely one, and I think this is something that we should all really be learning about, you know, and I mentioned the word somatics earlier, somatics coming into the body. I feel like for so many of us, this is so important. And it seems that like somatic work and somatic therapy is something that's only seems to be available to a very small few who are like, you know, fortunate to understand that. But actually, it's really, really simple. And it's coming out of the head, often where there's a lot of suffering, a lot of thinking, a lot of drama, and coming out of that drama and out of that thinking and into the body.
Yeah,
because the body is what is usually holding the wounding, but it's also that bodily awareness, we can get into regulation quicker. So for me, what I would, before I became somatically tuned in or aware, I would just feel ambiguous anxiety or anger or upset when my relationship ruptured. And that would then link to, okay, I feel unpleasant right now, and so therefore it must be X, Y, and Z. And then I would kind of come back into my head. So the difference when I teach my clients and couples around somatic work is dropping out of the thought processes and the meaning and all of the things that are going on and into the body. What are you experiencing in your body right now? Describe that to me. And so they can say, well, you know, I have a fast beating heart. I'm feeling like a really closed in my throat. I'm feeling nausea in my tummy. And that ability to tune into what is going on for me right now in my body and in this moment is a way of being able to regulate really fast. Because once you are conscious of what's going on in your body and you can sit with those feelings, it means that you can get through them a lot faster. It just seems to happen, like, you know, just coming into the body and tuning into those states starts to kind of allow them to dissipate much more quickly.
So how would that look for a couple if they were to experiment with that?
Yeah, so I would say if they are available to do this, and they could either, if they can't, they can go away and do it on their own. But if they can, lying down on the bed side by side, and literally just take it in turns, starting from the tips of their toes, saying something that they are experiencing on a sensation level and where they're experiencing it. So for example, partner A, I'm feeling tingling in my left toe. Partner B, and then there's a pause, both take a breath together. I'm feeling real tension in my calves. Back to partner A, and so on as they move their way up the body. By the time they get to the top, they probably don't give a shit about what they were arguing about. And if they do, then they can get to it in a much more regulated way.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful practice, that. And like you say, it may be that they're not available to do that together and they need to go and do that on their own and have some time apart as well.
Yes.
There's just many different ways that you can do that. And I think we're in a time, aren't we, where the somatic work and the language is coming more and more out, because, you know, it's more and more used in coaching, therapy, in all sorts of disciplines, which is just so wonderful, because we've just been cut off from head down for far too long. And this is where all the magic is. So.
It is where all the magic is. And it's also, you know, like where we're holding all of our pain. Yep. And it's also where we can learn to tend to ourselves in much more compassionate ways, you know. And I just feel like you could teach a four-year-old somatic work. Like, how beautiful to invite children to tune into how they feel in their bodies. What are they experiencing in their bodies? It would mean that, like you said, we wouldn't end up in such a kind of heady, cut off society. But one of my favorite things, and like you said, you're not always available to do the work together. You know, sometimes if something's happened for me and I do get triggered, you know, I've still got kind of like childhood trauma and things that trigger me. And also the are you available thing used to be really triggering for me, because I used to always want to get things sorted like that.
Right.
And actually what I learned over time is that's actually a trauma response. You know, because you're so not able to stay in the unpleasantness of disconnection, perhaps because of what you experienced as a child in terms of disconnection and what that meant, that can feel really traumatic. And so you want to get back into connection quickly, but that sometimes needs time. And also your partner's probably not ready and they need to do their process work. But I would almost override Luke's ability to have that time, because I found it so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So what I now learned to do is to contain and to regulate. And one of those things is I might be going to the bathroom, shut the door, tune into my body. What am I experiencing and where am I experiencing it? And I might be like, okay, my stomach feels really painful. It feels like there's like holes in my stomach. Like, it could be really great to describe it just tangibly, like what it feels like. And then I'll just put my hands there and breathe in and just stroke those parts and go, you're okay. Everything's okay, everything's fine, and regulate myself as though a mother would do to a small child, because at those moments that probably really is my small child that is in need at that moment to be reassured and regulated.
Beautiful. That's just lovely. And anything else that you'd love to share of any goal practices that you do regularly or that you visit every so often?
Eye gazing. I mean, so a lot of my couples that come to sessions, some of them are just totally down for eye gazing, they love it. Others fall into like, no, this feels far too uncomfortable. And what I do is I invite them to stay with whatever is there, full permission, like laughing or, you know, any of those things. That's just energy, like being released from the body. And, you know, we often don't connect with our partners in these deep and sincere ways, and that can feel really uncomfortable. It can also bring up a lot of emotion that some of us aren't ready to feel. And so what I say is just try it, build up. If kind of like 5 minutes feels like too much, do it for 30 seconds, but breathing all the way through it and allowing whatever is there to be there. So I remember the first time that I eye gazed with Luke, and I was looking at him and I was like, Oh my goodness, I'm not even sure I fancy Luke. Oh my goodness, like I think I'm with the wrong person. Oh my God, what are all these strange feelings coming up? And now what I've realized is how transient our silly little minds are in these moments and what we can tell ourselves. And so now I just watch. And sometimes Luke and I will do it and I'll feel nothing. Sometimes we will do it and I will feel the deepest and most profound spiritual connection with him, you know. So now I don't listen to any thoughts that come up in those moments. And so that's what I invite couples to do. Just notice it. Just see what's coming up for you in this moment. What are you feeling? And I used to remember, like Luke used to kind of like we when we used to do it for a bit longer, he used to just like start kind of like looking like he was getting really tired and falling asleep, and I'd get really pissed off, and I wouldn't say anything, but I'd show it with my eyes, and so he'd be like, and he would react to me being pissed off, and this was all going on through eye contact and no words. And actually, what was happening there is that was my trigger. It was my trigger that Luke was avoidant, or Luke didn't care, or Luke, you know, and I was even creating that meaning through his eyes getting a little bit lazy in the eye gazing. So this, what I'm trying to say through that little anecdote is lots of stories and things can come out of those exercises, and allowing them all to be there and just accepting all of it can be really transformative for relationships, but it can also be a really beautiful practice to get you into connection.
And I also love the practice you mentioned before of just actually sitting back to back together. So if even the eye gazing feels too uncomfortable or too odd or anything like that, just that act of sitting back together is so powerful. I mean, we do that quite a bit as well, because it's just instantly just takes you out of the day into the present moment, into being together, just feeling each other, just so simple. And it's sometimes these simple ones that are just the best, aren't they?
They are.
It doesn't
All the
have to be
simple
complex.
practices are the best ones.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
beautiful.
And there's another one that's slightly different. I recognize that I've shared quite a lot of kind of physical practices, but one thing that I always say to couples, in fact, there's two things here that I'd like to share, if that's okay. The first one is creating a relationship like manifesto is so important. I kind of think like no business, no venture, nothing would ever begin without like an ethos, like a value system. Like, why are we even doing this? You know, like to get both partners into a mutually shared, agreed relationship vision means that they always know when they're in accordance with that. And then if they're in out of alignment with that, this is like, well, look, we both agreed on this. Like, this is what we both care about and value. Why is it that we're not in alignment with this? And what do we need to do to get back there? So for me, I think that's even more important than a marriage certificate, like to have a shared relationship vision. And I often create that with my couples in sessions, and sometimes they start it with me and then go away. And often we, you know, they like to do it together because a lot of things can come up through that. You know, a lot of difference in meanings and nuances and words. And what do you mean by that? We have sex every day, or every once, you know, and it can be a very like, you know, what is we have regular intimacy mean can mean one completely different thing to one person. So it's getting that shared vision, and that is so important.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also that's checked in on every so often. Like, I know some couples that might be part of their new year is just checking in on how have we been this year and what do we want to create together next year and where are we out of alignment and all these different things. And it's like a map, isn't it, that you can guide each other and to include your sex life in that, because people often have such clear visions about their health or their businesses or where they're living or whatever, but kids if they have them, but when it comes to their relationship, there's nada.
And because it goes back to that thing that you were saying about we just think they're supposed to work, because Disney movies and, you know, relationships on TV taught us that, really, didn't they? That they're just supposed to work because love is supposed to be this mystical, incredible thing that just floats us all away, and, you know, and it doesn't.
Totally. And what's the second one?
Oh, what was the second one? Okay, yeah. So relationship ritual, I think, is really important. And you know, a lot of the people that I work with, you know, come to me via the women's work that I've done previously. So you get a lot of kind of spiritually minded women. But actually, what I found is it's the men, particularly who have, you know, oh, don't want to do any ritual, or you know, this is all kind of, you know, they're a little bit skeptical. They love the ritual things that I subscribe. And this can be as simple as just, what are you saying goodbye to? What do you no longer want in your relationship? What commitments do you two make to one another for the future of your relationship? I love doing this on a New Year's Eve with Luke. I love doing this, like, you know, on different kind of like changes in the seasons, and just like checking in, like I no longer want to, you know, raise my voice when I'm angry. You know, I no longer want to. I want to leave behind any trust issues that I've had with you. I want to leave behind. I want to call in, and so you can call in things. You can leave things behind. Some couples just want to do this sitting on the couch with a cup of tea. You know, other couples might want to write things down and burn them, make it into a proper kind of ceremony, whatever. But I think the ritualistic side of relationship is so important, and something that we have lost really in how do we mark transitions. With, you know, in relationship, we're maturing together, we're growing up together, we're healing together. And I think often these stages in our relationship fail to get marked, that hang on a minute, we've changed. You know, we've changed. What we need, we should mark this. This is a new transition for us.
And just like there's a lack of rites of passage for children moving into adulthood and on all the phases of life. And I think I've had a few people get a bit freaked out by the word ritual. And I think just rituals, just it can be very, like you say, ceremonial. But ritual to me is just, in essence, stepping out of the everyday busyness of life and just creating this space to do whatever. But it could be as simple as, like you say, as where are we? What do we want to let go of, and what do we want to do going forward? And it can be so simple, but it's those marking of those passing of time and those changes and all of those things. It is such a beautiful thing to bring into not just relationships but to life. So thank you. What a beautiful thing to end on. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and also being so open about your life experience and your journey with this, because you know, I love that your Kate is somebody who so shares all of this on social media, and I really see the permission that it gives to the women that you engage with. And you know, because you share not just your joys, but you share the challenges, you share everything. Because you know, people often imagine when we're doing this work, we must be amazing at all this stuff, but most of us have got into it because of exactly the opposite reason.
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's the simultaneous kind of teacher learning journey, isn't it? Like, you know, I'm learning this and then I'm sharing it with you. And I guess that's the gift, isn't it? In, you know, well, both you and I have a gift in being able to like share that knowledge in ways that people understand and warm to. But also we've got, I've gone through those processes as well to be able to share that with any kind of meaning and compassion and understanding.
Totally. So I'd love to finish, as we're on the Sexy Life podcast, to ask a couple of final questions. And I would love to ask, what does living a sexy life mean to you?
Wow, what a question. Sexy, living a sexy life to me, oh gosh, in so many ways. But I think the things that make me feel like I'm living a sexy life is when I am in pleasure in my life. And pleasure for me is scented candles when I'm working. It's flowers in the house that I can see. It's letting me know that me is worthy of pleasurable things. And it's dancing. Like, dancing for me makes me feel alive in my body. And as someone who's had kind of a lifetime of like body image hang-ups and all of those things, when I take off my clothes and I dance in the mirror and I choose to celebrate the curve of my hips or the way I circle when I dance or the shake of my ass, it makes me literally transform the way I see me. And that for me is sexy, because that's when I see myself as the most sexy version of me.
Oh, beautiful. A whole load of gorgeous things right there. Mm. And where can listeners find you online?
Oh, well, I hang about on Facebook in my group. It's called the Sister Circle Inner Temple. So I think if you were to search via Sister Circle Inner Temple, you'd find us. There's a beautiful community of women on there. And I'm also on Instagram at Sister Circle Temple.
And Kate also has a little offer, which is that she has does a free 30-minute discovery call. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in working with Kate, reach out to her. She works with women and couples, and I will put all the links in the show notes to Kate's groups and Insta as well, so that mm-hmm. you can find her there. So thank you so much. It's been a delight and a joy. Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing your beauty and your wisdom today. Lots
thank
of love.
Thank you, Sarah. And I wish you so much love with this juicy, amazing podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Sexy Life podcast with me, Sarah Rose Bright. You can find all the details for me and my guest in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, and to make it easier for other people to find out about the Sexy Life podcast, I'd so appreciate it if you could take a moment to subscribe to or follow the podcast, review and rate it on Apple or Podchaser, and do share with your friends, loved ones, or anyone you think would benefit. Wherever and whenever you are listening, I wish you a beautiful day.